NHPR News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The gluten-free trend has become so big, it's even part of late-night comedy routines. Here's comedian John Pinette.
Have you tried gluten-free food? It needs gluten. I don't know what gluten is, but apparently it's delicious. And you need to put that back in there.
Although, in fairness, it is easier to find decent-tasting gluten-free alternatives these days, with food companies catering to the many millions of Americans who are giving up gluten. But now, some wonder if gluten is being unfairly demonized. While roughly 2 million Americans have severe reactions to it due to celiac disease, and another 18 million may have some kind of sensitivity, many health experts say the rest of us have no reason to eliminate gluten, and even that we could miss out on important nutrients if we do. Still, that's not convincing to folks who swear by their new no-wheat diets, with countless stories of people who genuinely feel much better passing up the rolls and trading pasta for rice. Today in The Exchange, why so many Americans are giving up their daily bread and whether they should. Let's hear from you. Have you gone gluten-free? If so, why? Or have you tried gluten-free and said, forget it? And overall, what do you make of this massive dietary trend? Join us, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have three guests for the hour with me in studio. Dr. Susan Schaefer. She's an adult and pediatric allergy asthma specialist with Dartmouth Hitchcock. And Dr. Schaefer, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Also with us, Dr. Daniel Leffler. He's director of research at the Celiac Center at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. He's also an associate professor at Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Leffler, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And joining us from Atlanta is Kim Severson. She's a reporter for the New York Times. She covers national food news and food trends. And Kim, great to have you too. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Well, and let's deal with that word, Kim, trend. You wrote about this recently. Some are calling gluten-free a fad, saying it'll go away in a few years, just like fat-free potato chips or bun-free hamburgers. But a lot of other people, Kim, are saying it's more of a serious trend that is really going to reshape our dietary landscape for a long time to come. What do you think, Kim? Fad or trend?
The word fad is so charged. In fact, I was writing about gluten-free food, and I was talking about food fads, and there were several gluten-free people on one of our copy desks, and they were like, this isn't a fad, it's a trend. This isn't, you know, it charges people because they don't want to feel like they're eating in a way that is faddish. And I think gluten-free is both a fad and a trend, and, people are just really trying to feel better through diet right now. So they will go to fat-free, or they will go to low-carb, or they will go to paleo, or they'll go to gluten-free, because I think there's an overall general disease with how we eat and the physical effects of that. So there's certainly people who are bopping around from fad to fad, and gluten-free right now is, Gwyneth Paltrow's eating gluten-free, then, you know, there you go. I'm going to be like Gwyneth, and there's a fad. But I think it's also a trend in that there's a sort of some underlying long-term changes in how we think about the ways that we eat that will last long after they stop labeling water gluten-free, which I saw they were doing recently. So I think that, you know, we're talking about an industry that at this point there's some predictions that the gluten-free packaging, because, you know, American marketing is terrific, and when American food manufacturers see something going on, they can turn on a dime. So we're looking at maybe, you know, $6 to $7 billion industry by 2017 if this continues. You have to kind of look at it as the low carb trend. So we look at that in 2004, say that was like the peak of the low carb trend. McDonald's, and everybody was giving us hamburgers and lettuce leaves, you remember that? And that was maybe peaked out around $3 billion, not quite $3 billion in 2004. So if we're talking about gluten free and they predict this will be maybe double that in terms of what just the food manufacturing industry is doing. I think that's a fairly significant movement in how we're eating. Although I tell you, I have a lot of friends who have cycled in and out of the gluten-free eating over the past year or so, and I can never quite remember who's eating how at a dinner party. But I'm like, wait.
Bring your own.
So, you know, I think there's both faddishness to this, but there is also some real underlying changes in how we're looking at food processing, at wheat consumption, whole grains. You know, you'll see ancient grains coming up as a little bit of a trend line that I think is a part of this movement toward away from processed manufactured foods and more to whole foods.
Okay. And what do you think, Dr. Leffler, fad or trend or people cycling in and out? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think I agree that there's probably a component of both, although the one thing that makes me optimistic that this is a little bit different is, you know, there's really very few people out there who really need to be on a low-carb diet or a low-fat diet or a paleo diet. I think these are all trends that really can disappear without hurting anyone. The gluten-free diet has this reservoir of hundreds of thousands of people who will always medically need the diet. So I think that will keep it in the public eye and in the supermarket shelves in a way that these other diets haven't been. So I agree. I think there has been a lot of fad related to the explosion of interest in the gluten-free diet. And I think while it's been sort of a double-edged sword in some ways, but by and large, it's worked to dramatically increase the quality and types of food that are available for my celiac patients, which has been wonderful. And I don't see that going away in the way that we've seen some of these other diets in the past. So,
sure. So people with celiac have severe reactions to gluten. And this has been great for them, Dr. Leffler, because the amount of attention and products and so forth is bigger than ever. So that helps them a lot.
Very much so.
Yeah. But I've also heard people with celiac say that they're a little annoyed by non-celiacs getting on the gluten-free trend because there's sort of an eye roll aspect to it, like, oh, you're jumping on the bandwagon too. I wonder what you think about that.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I hear that all the time. And people, I think, in the community are very mixed. I think they've seen a lot of benefits and recognize the benefits of having a much larger market than they themselves could bring to bear. It's really, you know, stimulated large companies who had never paid attention to this market before to start getting in and really developing really good foods, or at least much better foods than there ever had been before. At the same time, it's watered it down somewhat. So it's not, you know, you can go to a restaurant and they can have a gluten-free menu that isn't really gluten-free because majority of people ordering off it don't really need to be gluten-free. So it's added to some confusion and it has watered down the importance in a lot of people's eyes, and they are, you know, no one likes to be, you know, something that has been really forced upon a lot of people and they need to do for their own health. They don't really like to be mixed up with people who are just doing it because it's the new hot thing. But at the same time, I don't think anyone denies the benefits of having this popularity around.
Well, and Dr. Schaefer, I want to get to you too, but I also want to remind our listeners, you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Today, we're looking closer at this big, big, big trend of so many Americans going gluten-free, giving up gluten entirely, or at least reducing the amount in their diets. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Dr. Schaefer, what are you hearing from your patients who come in and say, hey, Dr. Schaefer, should I go gluten-free or not? What are they concerned about?
Well, I'd have to say I see a lot of patients who have already experimented going gluten-free. They've either heard from another health professional or from their neighbor or from their mailman that they should try going gluten-free because of their chronic abdominal pain or because of fatigue or just generally not feeling as good as they would like to feel. And I would have to say that some patients definitely feel much better going gluten-free, but other patients will come in and say, I really tried that, and I don't think it made much of a difference. I would say that I do have a very small number of patients who need to be gluten-free, who are truly, say, allergic and really have to avoid all gluten. I say most patients, it's sort of more of a choice. And a lot of patients might find that they feel better if they eliminate large amounts of gluten, but they can tolerate small amounts. Whereas with a truly allergic patient, they can't even tolerate small amounts.
Is an allergic patient the same as celiac, Dr. Schaefer, or is that a little bit different?
No, I would say there's really sort of three main categories of patients. There's the celiac patients who truly have a problem with gluten, which is one particular protein that's found in wheat and also in rye and barley, and Dr. Leffler is much more of an expert on that than I am. Then there are patients who are allergic to wheat, which is not exactly the same thing as being allergic to gluten, because there are other proteins in wheat that patients can be allergic to. So you can have a patient who's allergic to wheat who is not allergic to gluten. They're allergic to a different protein that's found in wheat.
Wow, that's complicated.
And those patients may be able to tolerate things like rye and barley that have gluten but don't have the other wheat proteins in them. And then there's the large category of the intolerant patients who we don't really have a specific definition for why they may or may not feel better off of gluten. And we don't have really specific testing for those patients. And I would say that that is definitely the majority of patients that we see.
Okay, a couple things we should really dig into, the idea of intolerance, who's sensitive and who isn't. And I'm really interested in this idea that there's gluten sensitivity and then there's wheat, and that those may be two different things. In other words, you can eat bread, you can't eat bread, but maybe drink beer, because beer is not from wheat. But let's go to our listeners, lots of folks who want to jump in our conversation already. And Cheryl's in Lincoln. Hi, Cheryl, go ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
Great.
Great. I just wanted to relay my experience. I recently, over the last year, lost 30 pounds going on the wheat belly diet. Now, this just means not necessarily no gluten, but no wheat. And so I'd like to hear the doctor's discussion on the difference and the clarification between a wheat-free and a gluten-free diet. Lots of times I go into a restaurant and I'll say, does this have any wheat in it? And they'll assume that I'm talking about gluten. And I know there's kind of a fine line, but I wanted to know if the doctors had any opinion on the difference between the two of those.
Okay, we'll definitely clarify that after a short break. Dr. Leffler, I'll turn to you after a break about the difference between wheat-free and gluten-free, but hold on for just a moment. And also after that break, I'd love to ask you, Kim, about this idea of a gluten-free diet. A lot of people latched onto it because they think it's a way to lose weight. Our caller says she lost 30 pounds. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR.org is your source for New Hampshire news. Click over right now to read a story about New Hampshire's budding composting industry. Keep informed about New Hampshire news all day at NHPR.org. Partly to mostly sunny today, high temperatures in the 70s, mostly clear tonight, lows upper 40s to mid-50s, partly sunny tomorrow. Coos County has a chance of showers in the afternoon, tomorrow's highs in the 70s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Yellow Barn in Putney, Vermont. Chamber music nightly at 8 through August 2nd, from Bach's musical offering to new music influenced by ancient Chinese culture. YellowBarn.org. And Southern New Hampshire University's graduate program in community mental health and counseling in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. snhu.edu/PCMH. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, why so many Americans are giving up their daily bread and going gluten-free. Let's hear from you this hour. Have you chosen a gluten-free diet? If so, why? Or have you tried gluten-free and said, no, not for me? And overall, what do you make of this huge, huge dietary trend that we're seeing in America? The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And I've got a couple Facebook comments that I'll share with all of you in just a moment. But Dr. Leffler, to you first. Just before the break, we had a caller who wanted to know a little bit more about wheat versus gluten. Dr. Schaefer went there a little bit, but I'd love to hear from you too, Dr. Leffler.
Sure. So wheat is just what it sounds like. Wheat is the grain in all its forms. Gluten is a protein, or actually hundreds of closely related proteins that run across the grains of wheat, rye, and barley. So the main difference between a gluten-free diet is that you exclude all three, and you have to do so very strictly. With a wheat-free diet, most people on a wheat-free diet don't need to be quite as strict. depends why you're on it, but mostly that's true. And it doesn't exclude rye and barley. And rye is sort of a minor player in most things outside of rye, but barley actually shows up in a lot of different things. It's done in a lot of food colorings and additives and flavorings. So it actually does, you know, being able to not exclude the barley component of the gluten-free diet does make it a less rigorous diet in a lot of ways.
And a little bit easier to follow. A lot of people don't want to give up their beer.
Completely.
Yeah. What do you think about our caller, Kim, who said, hey, I lost 30 pounds on this no-wheat diet, the wheat belly diet. I've seen this advertised on the internet. Is this why some people go gluten-free?
Well, I think weight loss is a constant interest in America. And, you know, it's so difficult to do good diet, as the doctors, I'm sure, will say, to do really good nutrition-based studies on people because everybody's body is a little different and people eat. It's very, very hard to control the daily diet of somebody that you're studying and to really take certain nutrients out and put them in and see exactly what it is that's causing weight loss or weight gain. A lot of dietitians and nutritionists I talk to say that it's sort of everything always comes down to calories in and calories out, like, you know, eat less and work out more, eat less and exercise more. However, there are, of course, things that, and a lot of research being done on things that cause us to gain weight or lose weight, you know, at different rates. So that being said, I think for a segment of people, once you start cutting out wheat, things like bagels and pizza and toast and carbohydrates that, you know, tend to have us gain some weight. Once you cut those out, you will lose weight. Once you start paying a little attention to what you eat every day and stop sort of mindless eating that we tend to do here in this country, that can help you lose weight. But I do think for some people, finding that formula for what really helps your body work and, you know, have the best metabolism, I think that is certainly true for people. I know many people who are not eating gluten because it helps them lose weight. And why? Maybe they're not eating bagels and pizza anymore. Or so, perhaps there is something, you know, chemically in their body that is reacting to gluten. I think that's a really difficult thing to pinpoint. And I think if we could pinpoint, I'll tell you what, everybody, don't eat gluten and you lose 20 pounds, everybody would do it because we're so overweight as a nation. You know, we have so much food coming at us. And I was talking with Dr. Marion Nuffel from NYU, and she said, you know, we are like cattle in fattening pens in this country, and we're one of the few countries that have the luxury of being able to cut out entire food groups and see what happens. Like, we're going to cut out fat. We'll see how that goes. We're going to cut out gluten or wheat products. We'll see how that goes. Like, we have so much food coming at us. We're constantly trying to figure out how to stop it from getting into our bodies, just culturally. So it's an interesting question, and I'm sure that the people who have medical degrees, which I do not, probably have something more to say about whether removing a specific food from a diet is actually weight loss or if it's purely caloric.
So it's not that going that gluten makes you fat. It's that going gluten-free for some folks makes them pay closer attention to what they're eating overall.
This is what some folks say. Yes, some nutritionists say. I'm curious to see what the doctors, nutritionists have to say about that, but. You know, it's certainly once you start to think about your diet on a daily basis and you're like, oh, I should limit my dairy, you start to be much more conscientious about what you eat.
Okay.
And I think overall that makes you lose weight.
Let's take some more calls and comments from our listeners. Again, the exchange number 1-800-892-6477. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And let's go to Jenna in Southern Maine. Hi, Jenna. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. About last year, I discovered that gluten did not sit well with me, and still parsing out whether it's an allergy or an intolerance, but I was hoping to hear about how these allergies can kind of emerge or how these intolerances can emerge after years and years of living an Italian lifestyle with lots of gluten, like, and enjoying it with no problem, and then discovering that my body changed.
Yeah, so at some point it didn't make you feel good. Can you just briefly, Jenna, tell us how this, you know, how this made you feel? One day it was fine, and the next day, how did you feel?
I think it thought I had diabetes. It was a combination of, like, getting extremely exhausted after a meal, sometimes falling asleep.
Wow.
And having really what I called a gluten ball, which was just really, like, tight, hard, like, upper gastric area, really sharp pain.
Yeah. So digestive distress and fatigue, probably something you hear about a lot, Dr. Schaefer. Can you address her issue? It's a really interesting question. Allergy, intolerance, sensitivity. These are some of the words that are thrown around, and I'm not really sure what they all mean.
Right. And allergy a lot of times is used sort of as a generic term when it's not really a generic term. It's quite a specific term. And certainly when an allergist uses the term allergy, we are talking about one specific type of mechanism where a patient will make a certain type of antibody to a foreign protein that will trigger certain symptoms when they're exposed to that protein. Wheat allergy is almost exclusively seen in children. Almost, and the vast majority of those children will outgrow a wheat allergy by elementary school. So when an adult comes to me and says, I feel better if I don't eat wheat, I'm assuming that they're probably intolerant. Now, we can test them to prove whether it's allergy or not. We cannot test them to prove it's if it's intolerance or not, because the only test for that is you avoid the food and you feel better. Now, it is true that with either allergy or intolerance, we can see somebody who has lived 30, 40 years tolerating a food perfectly well, and then one morning they wake up and their body just decides they don't like that food anymore. And we really don't understand the mechanism behind that.
Why is this so important, Dr. Schaefer, the difference between intolerance and allergy? One you can specifically test for, the other it's kind of a guessing game almost.
Right. Well, I would say that the most important difference is that food allergies can be dangerous and can actually very rarely lead to fatal reactions, whereas intolerances tend to make people very uncomfortable, but they're never going to send you to the emergency room. It's never going to cause an acute life-threatening event. And so with an allergy, the patient has to be very, very careful to be strictly avoiding even tiny amounts of that food, whereas with intolerances, patients certainly are going to feel better if they avoid the food, but if they happen to accidentally get a small amount in whatever they've eaten, they're not going to end up in the emergency room.
Yeah. I wonder how you advise people, Dr. Leffler. You know, you're intolerant, you're sensitive, you're allergic. How do you help people sort this out?
Yeah. So, you know, I think actually this brings up a really important point. I'm glad we're getting to it. Now, is one of the things that I always advise is that people who are considering going on a gluten-free or a wheat-free diet actually talk to their doctor about it before they make the dietary change. Because for celiac disease specifically, it is actually very challenging to test patients for celiac disease once they've been on the diet for a while. All the tests, I mean, celiac disease is unusual in the autoimmune diseases, as there is really no way to differentiate a healthy person who's avoiding wheat from somebody who has celiac disease and has been on a gluten-free diet and is doing a good job controlling their disease. There's no test, including endoscopy or blood tests, that can really differentiate the two. So it gets very challenging to figure out what people have when they come to us for the first time already on a diet. And some simple blood testing can really make everyone's life a lot easier. At the same time, I think that it's really the same for celiac disease as for allergy. It's really about the strictness and the concern we need to have with how seriously you take the diet. For people with gluten intolerance or sensitivity, really they can be as strict as they feel they need to be to control the symptoms, whatever symptoms seem to be improving on the diet. There's no known or suspected danger to long-term gluten exposure in this population versus allergy, which was already mentioned, where you can have really severe reactions. And in celiac disease, where you, if you continue to have gluten exposure, you continue to have damage to the intestine and an autoimmune reaction that can lead to everything from osteoporosis to problems with pregnancy, to in some cases types of cancers. So it really is a disease we want to take very seriously when people actually have the disease. And I think sorting that out early on is the most efficient way for everyone.
We have two Facebook comments, actually, from people who have celiac. Erica says, I gave up gluten 6.5 years ago when I was finally diagnosed with celiac disease after a lifetime of misdiagnosis. Erica says, well, I don't think gluten is good for you. Giving it up as a fad diet drives me crazy. Erica, thank you for that. Here's Kate also, who says, yes, a year ago, I gave up gluten because I was diagnosed with celiac disease at age 70. It was a real eye-opener. I thought celiac was something only babies had. I never would have considered going gluten-free otherwise. So thanks for those Facebook comments. You can post a comment on our Facebook page, too, if you want. It's NHPR Exchange all one word, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And here's one for you, I think, Kim, first, relating to what Erica said on Facebook. She says, I gave up. She says, well, I don't think gluten is good for you. Some people seem to be saying now, and this is after, you know, reading a lot of literature, that gluten is being demonized, that there's vitamins, proteins, minerals that are good for you. What do you think? Is gluten necessarily bad for you?
Well, gluten's a perfectly, reasonable. It's naturally occurring in food. It's a protein strand that happens, when we have bread, gluten is what gives it structure. And gluten, the gluten has been occurring for a long, long time. This is not like trans fat, for example, that was a manufactured fat that our bodies didn't know how to handle. Gluten is in a naturally occurring thing that does a lot of good things in the kitchen. But I think it's gluten itself, the nature of it may change in the processing of food and the manufacturing of food, and when you strip away, the germ and other parts of the wheat, you're left with something that isn't particularly digestible or as healthy. So I don't think gluten. I think gluten itself has been a little demonized. There's certainly gluten in whole wheat bread, and whole wheat bread is, for people who can tolerate it, is a perfectly healthy thing to eat, I think. So I think gluten itself isn't the issue. I think it's perhaps what our food chemists are doing to gluten and the amount of, or to wheat at least, and the amount of this changed food that we're eating that our bodies really don't know what to do with. So I feel a little bit, it's sort of like people demonizing sugar. Certainly sugar doesn't, too much sugar has a bad effect on us. A little bit of sugar is kind of delicious and makes eating pleasurable. There are naturally occurring sugars. I do think that the refinement of foods is really perhaps what we need to think about and how we cook and eat, more than trying to demonize a specific thing like gluten. Germ, bran, the endosperm in grain. Gluten is a protein that is part of grain too, and I think when we keep these grains whole, and gluten is in there, it's a perfectly healthy and delicious thing to eat.
Yeah, what do you think, Dr. Leffler? What are you missing out on when you don't consume wheat, barley, or rye?
So I think, like any diet, if you do it well, you can actually have a perfectly nutritious diet with or without gluten, the same way you can have one with or without meat or almost anything else. But, there's a reason wheat has become so prevalent, and it was really the founding sort of food staple for Western civilization, is because it's very high in protein, it's high in B vitamins, it's good in iron, it's high in fiber, which we all don't get enough of anyway. So actually, we do worry that when people go gluten-free, they actually are probably, in many cases, if they don't do it carefully, they're missing out on more than they're gaining from making that change. And that's one of the reasons we always suggest that people who are going to go on a restricted diet for any length of time see a dietitian. We see a lot of patients come in who have new deficiencies or new constipation because of they've gone gluten-free and they're now taking out this staple of the diet and haven't replaced it with some of these other types of grains that, again, are very healthy, but a little bit, they take some time to work into your diet.
Wow, so you just said something big there. You said you may be missing out on more than what they're gaining by going gluten-free because of these proteins and nutrients.
Yeah, very much. I mean, there's nothing that is automatically healthy about a gluten-free diet. You can do a bad gluten-free diet just like you can do a bad gluten-containing diet. and I think that's something that people need to pay attention. This isn't a panacea, some silver bullet. This is something that when you, as I think was said earlier, when you start to pay more attention to what you eat and start to have a more balanced diet, and probably cutting out gluten and rebalancing is a very reasonable part of that. And you can feel a lot better and you can lose weight and you can have better energy. But it's not just this one, just take this out and everything will be great. That's just not how it works.
What do you think, Dr. Schaefer? Do you hear that from your patients? Hey, I heard on Facebook or from, People Magazine or on Oprah or whatever, that if I just eliminate this, I'm going to feel great.
Patients definitely relay stories like that, and I have to say, I think a lot of times they're a little bit disappointed with the results, and I feel like a lot of times people have health issues that they want to fix. They're maybe overweight. They're maybe tired. They may have chronic abdominal symptoms. And they want to have some sort of control over it. And they want to be able to say, if I just avoid X, all of my problems will go away. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the times the solution is a lot more complicated than that. And a lot of patients find that this single answer is not an answer.
Yeah, it's disappointing. They hope to find that silver bullet. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't.
Exactly.
Let's go to some more of our listeners. And Deidre's calling from Dover. Hi, Deidre. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
I guess my comment is that I tried gluten-free for a while. I was feeling really tired. And I started going gluten-free. Felt a lot better. But I'm also an engineer and I wanted to know why. So I started adding things back into my diet, like whole grains, et cetera. And I still felt great. So what it came down to was paying attention to my diet, paying attention to what I ate, not eating a whole lot of refined foods. That's what was really making me feel better.
The processed foods, in other words, sort of the white crackers and all that stuff, Deidre.
Yep.
So what are you doing now?
What I'm doing now is I just try to eat more whole grains and pay attention to my diet, and I still feel great.
Okay. Deidre, thanks a lot for calling in. Kim, this sounds like something you said earlier in the program. Go ahead.
Well, I think that as this caller just points out, you know, once you start paying attention to your diet and eating more mindfully, you can feel better. Eating whole foods, you know, we're really on a, I think nationally, this is, I think, one reason that gluten-free is catching on in such great numbers is, as a nation, we're better cooks than we were 20 years ago, certainly. At least more of us are cooking more. We understand the importance of food that's, you know, fresher, whole foods. If you look at the rise in farmers markets, you know, alone that, you know, it's, I think, up 425% since the 1980s. There are 3,000 or 4,000 farmers markets around. Mm-hmm. People are learning to cook and learning to eat whole foods. You know, Häagen-Dazs had a great campaign a while ago with their 5-ingredient ice cream, and their thing was that they only put 5 ingredients in their ice cream, and this was a huge thing. So I think people want to eat simply. They want to eat less processed food in their diet, and gluten-free gives them sort of
easy way
the door
to do
that.
Yeah, okay, we're going to talk more in just a moment about gluten-free. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
NHPR's summer car raffle ends Saturday, and the grand prize is $25,000 toward the car of your choice. If you're our winner, you can choose a car from any of Grapponi Automotive Group's dealerships, Ford, Honda, Toyota, Scion, Mazda, or Hyundai. Support the station you love and the news you rely on by getting in on this raffle. Tickets are just $50 each or 3 for $100 at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Centurion Insurance Group of Hanover, New Hampshire, offering personal, commercial, and wholesale brokerage insurance services to clients nationwide at CenturionUSA.com. And Opera North performing Verdi's La Traviata, Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady, and Vile Street Scene in August at the Lebanon Opera House. Tickets at 603-448-0400. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a new statewide look at substance abuse in New Hampshire. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today, why so many Americans are going gluten-free. Join us with your thoughts, questions, comments, personal experiences. 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Twitter or Facebook to continue the conversation there as well. The number one more time, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go next to Steve in Nashua. Hi, Steve. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Thank you. I'm actually living with celiac disease, so I have to avoid gluten at all costs. And what I found is that apparently, just because something is labeled gluten-free doesn't mean it's actually free of trace gluten. So it's actually made this whole gluten-free status made my life a lot more difficult because everything is labeled gluten-free.
Wait, so the gluten-free trend has made your life more difficult, Steve, even though you have celiac disease? Seems like it would make it easier because there's more products out there?
You would think, but unfortunately, I have to avoid even trace amounts of gluten.
Yeah.
And there's a limit of so many parts per million that something can have of gluten and still be considered gluten-free with a label.
I see. So
it's the trace gluten that gets it.
Interesting. Okay, yeah.
Like in 2008 or something, Whole Foods had a gluten-free chicken nugget that was on the market that they were selling, and it actually turned out to have trace amounts of gluten in it, and people who were gluten-free, this is back before there were a lot of products, complained about it, and Whole Foods had to pull it off the market, and the company, I think it was Welcher Farms Chicken Nuggets, they had to reformulate their batter that they were putting on the nuggets and go to an entire gluten-free production line because of this very issue. And it's true that for people who are truly, truly, they need to absolutely not have any gluten, the number of gluten-free products that are out there that are just skirting the edge and have perhaps a little bit in it is a problem. I've heard of this before, so I appreciate this caller.
Yeah, Steve, thanks a lot. And last question for you, Dr. Leffler, because I know you have to leave us. From what I understand, the FDA is starting to respond to people like our caller, Steve, who really can't have any and can't tolerate products that skirt the edge, as Kim says. What do you know about that, Dr. Leffler?
Yeah, so after a lot of time and deliberation and installing, the FDA did come out with a definition of gluten-free, which is less than 20 parts per million. So it is not zero, but it is, for most people, a reasonable level to get to. Labeling is voluntary, though, so nothing has to be labeled. If it is gluten, it can still be gluten-free without the label. It just can't be. It shouldn't be not gluten-free if it doesn't. Although there is some data that, you know, there are mistakes happen in the line, just like they do in a restaurant. So I think one thing that the caller brings up is that, you know, we call it the gluten-free diet because it's easy to say. There really is no such thing as a gluten-free diet. There's no way to not be exposed to gluten. It's one of the biggest challenges our celiac patients have because really it's in the environment. It's in everything short of living in a bubble. There's no way to get those last traces of gluten out. And so it really does. It's the biggest problem for our patients with celiac disease.
Well, Dr. Leffler, thank you so much. I know you have a plane to catch, and you've been very generous with your time. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
That's Dr. Daniel Leffler, again, Director of Research at the Celiac Center at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and an Associate Professor at Harvard Medical School. We'll continue taking your questions and comments with Dr. Susan Schaefer and New York Times reporter Kim Severson. The number 1-800-892-6477. And Dr. Schaefer, here's an email that came in from Lauren who says, can your guests comment on the recommendation that people with autism maintain a gluten-free diet? This comes up a lot, Dr. Schaefer. Is there any sort of connection there?
Well, studies that have looked at this have not found an obvious connection between autism and gluten. But at one point I was talking to another pediatric specialist, I think it was a gastroenterologist, about this, and they pointed out something that I found very interesting. A number of children with autism, as a number of people in the general population, may have food sensitivities. And if these children with autism happen to have a gluten sensitivity that makes their belly hurt, their behavior might deteriorate as a result of them being in pain or uncomfortable. And so if those children eliminate gluten, their behavior might improve because they happen to feel better.
Interesting.
But there has really never been any sort of causal relationship between gluten and autism proven.
Okay, well, thanks for the email, because I know it's a question that a lot of folks have. Here's another question for you, Kim. You wrote about this in your article in the New York Times. The demographics of going gluten-free, who's more likely to adopt this lifestyle? We're not talking about celiac now. We're talking about people who've chosen to go this route.
Well, you know, this is kind of a far and wide-ranging fad, but certainly, you know, this discussion about who can afford to choose what they eat or don't eat, it was interesting, the piece I worked on. You know, obviously there is a certain amount of class issue here. You know, it's challenging if you do not have a lot of money to take out foods that kind of fill you up and are fairly inexpensive, and, you know, breads and sandwiches, you know. It's also some things that I found were interesting is that in a certain Southern Baptist and real conservative Christian groups, there are so many biblical references to grain that there's a certain rejection of gluten-free diet in certain pockets of conservative Christianity. And some immigrant communities, if you're all eating traditional food, it's sort of a way of keeping the culture intact, particularly when you're in an overwhelming new culture. So, for example, if everybody at the table is eating flour tortillas because that's what you always eat, it's difficult to be the one person to say, oh, I'm not going to eat those flour tortillas because I'm going gluten-free, when it's an important part of keeping the family or keeping the culture intact when you've moved to a new country. So it's kind of interesting that gluten-free eating is, for some people just considered a playground of the rich, the white, and the political left. I'm not sure that's exactly true, but it certainly does skew that way in some, looked at through some lenses. And some people reject gluten-free because it's, in the same way, I don't remember, brie cheese and arugula and the Prius-driving lefties, down here in the South, a lot of political conservatives sort of see gluten-free eating as kind of a Hollywood lefty thing. Now, it's not to say that I've certainly come across folks who are trying to eat and feel better and rejecting wheat who don't meet that broad category. But as far as pop culture, as it's playing out in pop culture, it's really sort of seen as that way to some folks down here. It's interesting.
Yeah, and you're in Atlanta, I should say. And
right.
Speaking of pop culture, real quickly, and then we'll go back to our phones, Kim, there is sort of a pop culture backlash developing. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel has gone off on this. His video about gluten has been viewed a gazillion times. We played a little clip of another comedian at the beginning of this show, John Pinette. What do you think about this sort of cultural backlash against gluten-free? You know, family and friends who are tired of figuring out what to serve at gatherings.
Oh, I feel, and I have been guilty of this too. I live with someone who's gluten-free, and I always, she'll order gluten-free, and I'll always say, and I'll have double gluten just because it makes me uncomfortable, especially as a food writer. A few weeks back in a couple months back, New Yorker had a great cartoon where they had these two ladies sitting there eating lunch, and the punchline was, I've only been gluten-free for a week, and already I'm more annoying. it's a terrific punchline. So I think, again, anybody who eats differently than we do, it's easy and fun to poke fun at them. Fat-free, I think, was the same thing. And we saw, things like you had mentioned fat-free potato chips at the top of the show, and that was, I think we were all looking for our fat-free, remember Snackwell cookies where we were eating, these fat-free cookies. We thought this was the best thing ever. And meanwhile, we were getting, terribly fat on carbohydrates. And there's that great Seinfeld episode where they all discover supposedly fat-free yogurt. And it's really, they start eating it and gaining weight. And it, it just doesn't do the thing that we all want a free pass, We want to be able to eat copious amounts of delicious food and not have any physical impact from it. I think it's, it's our culture, and who doesn't want to be able to just eat great amounts of things and then be completely healthy at the same time? It's sort of the American conundrum. So I do think that gluten-free is a great way for us to divide each other up and poke fun at other groups, particularly at a time when there are so few things you can make fun of anymore without getting in trouble. So here's one of
well,
them.
And poking fun aside at celebrities and so forth. And the comedians have, there's some very funny stuff out there. I do know people personally who say they feel a zillion times better. So there's just all ways to look at this.
Absolutely. And, again, everything with that aspect, there are people who this is a very serious medical condition, and it's not at all to say that it's dietary issues for people. It's very serious, and if someone really does have a need for this, it's a welcome trend. But then again, there are the dabblers, and those are the people who I think are the target for some of this. But there are people, again, and nutrition science doesn't know everything. There are anybody understands or thinks about alternative medicine will tell you this, just because we don't have a study that says this works doesn't mean that it doesn't work for a lot of people.
Do you want to jump in there, Dr. Schaefer?
Yeah, I just want to say that, as someone who talks to patients every day about this issue, I do sort of hedge my bets, and I tell patients it's very possible that in 10 or 20 years I'm going to have a name for this and I'm going to have a way to test for this. But right now we don't understand why you feel better off of gluten, and I don't know how to test you other than to have you do your homework and eliminate it from your diet and see how you feel.
Okay, let's go back to our listeners. And Joy is waiting in Nashua. Hi, Joy. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I have been gluten-free for about 10 years now, and I was having serious digestive problems, and my doctor suggested I try eliminating food groups, and the first thing I eliminated was dairy and saw no change, and I saw something on TV news about how gluten intolerance could cause migraines, arthritis-like symptoms, digestive problems, and skin conditions. And they featured one family who had all four of them in different members of the family. So I tried giving up gluten, and it was like a 180-degree change
really?
In direction
wow.
for me. I have tried to educate myself since then. I have found that the people most genetically prone to it are Scandinavians, Irish, and Italians.
Italians, but that's
a
gluten celebratory culture, isn't it?
Right. Well, and in the U.S., I found that a lot of manufacturers add more gluten to their breads in this country than you would find if you lived in Europe. And I did live in Europe for several years, and before this came about in my life, and loved the breads over there. But it for those of us for whom it is a medical issue, it's not fun when people say, oh, you know, there's just a little bit here, it won't hurt you, because I have occasions where I get a reaction, and then I have to go looking for where I got the gluten.
Mm, to become
and
a
I
detective.
Can't always find it.
Sure.
But, fortunately, I know how to cook, so I can cook at home and cook very much the way I did before, but I just substitute products.
Okay. So, well, thank you very much for calling in, Joy. It's good to hear from you, and I'm glad you're feeling better. You know, and speaking of the products, Kim, just very quickly, and then I want to wrap up with both of you. You've talked about the products in some of your writing, Kim. They're expensive. There are some good alternatives, especially for pasta, which a lot of people love, but they do cost more money. How come?
Well, I think that anytime you're having to do something to food and manufacture it, you know, that's going to add cost. But also I think it's, you know, it's what the market will bear. People who are looking for a way to feel better will pay more money for a food product that they think will make them feel better. I'm not sure that it's necessarily needs to be as expensive, but I do know that there's a, you know, as more products come on the market, the price is dropping a little. And in fact, it was interesting that one thing that actually got me into this is I was at Del Posto, which is one of New York's best, you know, top-end Italian restaurants. It's a four-star Italian restaurant in part of Mario Batali's universe. And the chef there, Mark Ladner, made every single pasta on the menu in a gluten-free form. And I thought, here we are at the sort of pinnacle of, you know, of culinary excellence in this country, at least as far as pasta goes. And he's doing every single dish gluten-free. And he said that about a third of the people at his table in his restaurant, a third of the tables in his restaurant on any night will have somebody who's not eating gluten. And that has moved him to open a small chain of fast food gluten-free pasta stands, you know, inexpensive dishes of pasta that are made gluten-free. And so I think you'll see that happening in products as well, where you have things that are expensive and at the high end kind of breaking the ice for these kind of products, and then it will, you know, move through the marketplace and get less expensive. But I think any time you have something that a lot of people want and there's not enough of it, the American marketplace is such that they will charge you more for it.
How does Mark Ladner, and you wrote about, you know, how he's just one of the nation's, as you put it, most heralded chefs, how does he feel about making pasta gluten-free?
Well, you know, in Italy, there are gluten-free pasta. Eating gluten-free is not sort of a terribly unusual thing. People in Italy see food so much as related to health and diet, and there's actually government subsidies for people who need gluten-free flours, chestnut flours, other kinds of things, and you can get a voucher from the government and go to a pharmacy, actually, and get gluten-free flours. In Italy, they see foods as so related to health, and so for whatever reason, in fact, I think one of the top gluten top researchers on celiac is an immigrant from Italy here in this country. So in Italy, it's not that big of a thing. You know, they certainly accommodate people who are gluten free, and it's been the celiac numbers of celiac sufferers in Italy is fairly high. So for him, it was fairly natural to, you know, culturally to take this food stuff and move it into the mainstream. So he really understands that. And he says that, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years, a lot of his creative energy has been going into mitigating dietary restrictions. As a chef, I think a lot of chefs feel this way, and they're trying to embrace it. They're trying to make people feel better when they eat. And so for him, he welcomed it into
his
kitchen.
That's great. Yeah, well, and one of my favorite Italian restaurants in Concord. I love Italian food, has many gluten-free alternatives, and it just makes it easier when you're going out to eat to invite everybody. Dr. Schaefer, final advice for somebody who might come to you and say, you know, I'm not feeling great, I'm not sure why, I heard about gluten-free on television, on Facebook, what should I do?
So if a patient comes to me, I try to explain to them the difference between the three types of gluten or wheat issues and what we can and can't test for. I do think it is important, as Dr. Loeffler pointed out, to do celiac testing before a patient goes gluten-free. And even though the end result might be the same, whether they have celiac or not, that they avoid gluten, I think it's important in terms of genetics and their other family risk for celiac and things like that for a patient to know if they have celiac or if it's simply an intolerance.
Okay.
And again, to be careful of the nutrition.
All right. Well, both of you, thank you very much. Dr. Schaefer, good to see you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That's Susan Schaefer, an adult and pediatric allergy asthma specialist with Dartmouth Hitchcock. Kim Severson, thanks for making time out for us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. I've enjoyed it.
Kim Severson, reporter for the New York Times. She covers national food news and trends. The Exchange is a production of NHPR, and this conversation continues on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org. I'd wish you luck, but you don't really need it for NHPR's car raffle. Don't get me wrong, it'd be exciting if you won. The car, the grill, the bike, and the kayak are all great prizes. But the news and information you get from NHPR every day are even more valuable. And that's what you're helping to pay for with your $50 raffle tickets. Call 1-888-805-NHPR or visit nhpr.org to get your tickets. And thanks.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where we get support from you, our listeners, and from New Hampshire Moose Plates, where 100% of license plate fees go to programs that support the state's natural, historical, and cultural heritage, mooseplate.com. And launching you, providing career coaching for college students, new grads, and early career professionals, because big dreams deserve support. Information at launchinginthelettering.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVU Concord.
89.1. WEVS Nashua.
88.3. WEVH Hanover.
91.3. WEVN Keene.
90.7. WEVC Gorham.
107.1. WEVJ Jackson.
99.5. WEVF Colebrook.
90.3. And WEVQ Littleton.
91.9. And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Leaders of the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee agreed yesterday to move forward on a bill that addresses critical problems at the VA. The draft legislation would allow some veterans to be treated by non-VA health care providers, and it would give the incoming VA secretary more authority to fire underperforming senior executives. The $17 billion package is being called a rare act of bipartisanship in a Congress known more for gridlock. Veterans groups, for the most part, say the bill is a step in the right direction, but they'll continue to press for additional reforms, efforts to improve medical care for our nation's veterans. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Israel continues to hit targets in Gaza as the three-week-old conflict continues. Militants are still firing rockets into Israel. Palestinian health officials say well over 1,100 Palestinians have now been killed. Israel says at least 53 soldiers have been killed and three civilians, one of whom was a Thai national. There are now conflicting reports that Palestinian officials have proposed a new truce. It would reportedly last for at least 24 hours. Fighting between government forces and pro-Russian militias in eastern Ukraine is taking a heavy toll on civilians. NPR's Corey Flintoff reports local officials say more than 20 people have been killed by shelling in the past day.
Ukrainian government troops have been advancing on the cities that remain in the hands of pro-Russian separatists. Witnesses reported loud explosions near the center of Donetsk, the region's biggest city. Officials in the separatist-held city of Luhansk say government artillery fire hit an old people's home, killing five residents. Human rights groups criticize both sides for using unguided missiles and artillery near population centers. The Ukrainian government accuses the pro-Russian fighters of deliberately setting up positions in civilian areas. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Moscow.
The Dutch government says an international